Welcome to Go To Gal, episode number 224. As always, I'm your host, Jacqueline Malone, and today I'm so excited to share with you my friend, Becca. Now, Becca is the go-to gal for Squarespace. We met a little over a year ago, probably a year and a half ago. We were in a mastermind together, and it's been amazing getting to know her and seeing how she became the go-to gal for Squarespace, which we're definitely going to talk about in this conversation, but really just how she's really simplified something that can feel really complicated. And I think that's part of the magic of what she does. Now, I am thinking about doing some updates to my website, and some of the stuff that I had done or had in mind from when we first created my site a number of years ago, I know has changed. And so I wanted Becca to come on to talk to us about, okay, what should we be thinking about in 2022? Not if we're gonna, like, I am overhauling my site, but even if you already have a site and it's pretty recent, or it's even if it is a few years old, what little tweaks can you make? How can you revamp it to, one, be like helping you bring in more business, but also just, what are we looking for in 2022? Let's get with the times here. What should we be thinking about? What has changed? What should we not have anymore? What should we add? And specifically through the lens of how it is going to help bring us more business. So I am personally very excited for this conversation, and I have a hunch you're going to be too. All right, first, let me formally introduce you to Becca, and then we will dive right in. Becca Harpain is a self-taught web designer turned educator behind Inside the Square. She helps entrepreneurs get started with Squarespace, offering free training and tutorials on her YouTube channel. Her videos have been viewed over 1 million times in just 3 short years. From creation to customization, she is the go-to gal for all things Squarespace. When she's not creating new codes or tutorials to share with the World Wide Web, you can find her running, hiking, and backpacking her way across the trails of the Pacific Northwest. All right, let's get to it. Here is my conversation with Becca. Becca, I am so excited to have you here today.
Jacqueline, I am thrilled to be here. Thank you so much for having me on your podcast.
Of course. All right, we have a lot to dive into today, but before we do, take us back in time when you were growing up. What were you the go-to gal for back then?
I'm so excited to start with this. My mom is visiting, so I asked her right before we sat down. I was like, Mom, quick, what am I the go-to gal for? And her answer cracked me up. Apparently, I was the go-to gal for selling things. Apparently, I was well-known in my Girl Scout troop for selling more cookies than anybody. And apparently, as soon as I found out that my Barbie collection had value, I popped them up at a yard sale and sold every Barbie I had. And I even started fundraising at the ripe old age of 4. When I found out that the black rhino was endangered, I set a little donation box on my grandma's coffee table to try and earn money because I thought I could save the black rhino. So selling and fundraising, Jacqueline, that was my go-to gal moment as a kid.
Oh my gosh, I am obsessed with this. All right, so fast forward to today. Tell us, what do you do and who do you help?
I teach Squarespace users how to make their websites look amazing. So I have a YouTube channel, and every single Tuesday, I post a brand new tutorial where I teach people not only how to set up their site, but how to customize it way beyond what the design menu can do. I work with the do-it-yourselfers and the entrepreneurs out there who know that their website can be something awesome, but they might not be an expert in web design or how to create a website platform. So I try to teach people how to create a beautiful website without them having to be a total computer nerd like me.
I love it. And just for the people that are like slightly in that space or curious, when you say help them customize, is that, I know CSS is something that you work with. What does it look like? Because some people might be listening, they're like, well, wait, with Squarespace, isn't it just drag and drop? Like, isn't that the whole point of it? So what is that? Just tell us a little bit more. Because I think, one, for somebody that maybe has Squarespace, this might open up a whole new world. Or someone who hasn't gotten Squarespace because of those limitations, they may not realize something like this is even possible.
Yes. Oh, I know your listeners can't see. I'm smiling so big right now. So CSS is definitely my wheelhouse and what I love to teach people how to do. Squarespace has made it incredibly easy to customize with just a little bit of code. We can add CSS to multiple places in a Squarespace website to really make it stand out and do cool stuff it's not necessarily designed to do, but it's incredibly easy. For anyone that's intimidated by the concept of learning code, I completely taught myself how to do this. I never went to college for computers or web design or anything. And I figured out how to change the color of a button on a hover. And as soon as I did that, it was like, oh my gosh, a whole new world has opened up for my web design skills. What else can we do? And it turns out we can do a lot. So CSS customization is definitely a big focus of my tutorials and trainings because, oh, so many opportunities to do amazing things in Squarespace with CSS.
Ooh, you make me feel, I don't have Squarespace, but I've never learned CSS. I know a little bit of HTML, a little, very little. But I know enough to be, you know, whatever. But with CSS, it feels totally different. And that's something that in a lot of, like, I know I use FG funnels for our landing page builder. And I know that there's areas that we could be doing CSS in there. And
I don't touch that.
But that's something that, like, I feel like learning CSS, if that, especially if you are a DIYer and you're doing these different things, or if you're doing this for clients and you want more of that flexibility to be able to customize or just better brand things for your clients, learning CSS is something that I love how easy you make it, but it's applicable, not just to Squarespace.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And thank you for saying to make it easy. That's like the number one goal of all my tutorials. The whole concept of CSS is that it's just a language and all we have to do is figure out how to say in this computer language, when you see this thing, take this part of it and make it do that. That's literally all we're saying with CSS. You just have to learn the right words or the right terminology in this language. And it's applicable to all platforms like WordPress and the FG that you were talking about. You can absolutely rebrand and customize using CSS to make sure that your color is being used for active links on that page, or your accent color is what's being used for your call to action on any landing page you create or an email that you have. CSS can be applied to literally anything. But luckily with Squarespace, they have named all of the elements of their site a very specific name. So no matter what template you've started with in this latest version of Squarespace, I can teach anyone using this latest version how to change one specific thing. So it's going to go by the exact same code name, no matter what template you started with, which I think is super fun. And that's what makes it so easy to customize Squarespace.
Oh, well, thanks for the little peek behind the scenes there. Now, today, I really want to dive in with you about what we should be thinking about for our websites and different tips for how we can get them to convert better. But before we get into that, I always like to take a second, especially with talking to someone like you, where you are a go-to gal. So specifically, of just what did your journey look like in becoming the go-to gal for Squarespace? And were you ever afraid of niching to Squarespace? Or what did that look like? I really like to highlight your journey, or whenever I'm interviewing someone that has a similar one like this, for listeners to be able to see themselves in, if maybe they're working with a tool or they're thinking about niching and what does that look like? And you're such a great case study in that of you are so specific with who you help and how you help them. And that's opened up some really incredible opportunities for you.
Absolutely. It has been a wild ride, let me tell you. I started off about almost a decade ago now at this point, creating websites and just being a website designer, hopping from one referral to one client to the next, a real feast or famine kind of situation with my income at that point. And I had created a couple of videos that I put out on YouTube about verifying your Squarespace site for Pinterest, because I did it for a client. It was a couple of steps. It was a little more complicated than I expected. So the second client I had to do it for, I said, all right, I'm going to record this and share this with some people in case other people want to watch it. And that video got a bunch of views. I was like, wow, okay, that's kind of cool. And then I learned how to change a button color on a hover. I was like, oh my gosh, other people need to know how to do this. This is way too much fun. So I did another video. And I was an avid follower of Marie Forleo at the time, who posted a video every Tuesday. And I said, you know what? I've learned quite a few things about CSS and quite a few things about Squarespace. What if I did a video every Tuesday? Just try it. Just 3 months. See what happens. And I did. And I got such a great response from the Squarespace community. People were like, this code is so cool. I didn't know it could do this. Do you know more? What else can we do? So I continued posting every Tuesday and I took all the codes I have and I put them into one big old PDF. It was a hot mess. And I'm on version 10 of that PDF now. The first one I started with was, oh man, quite a mess. Put it out there and started selling it to Squarespacers. And the response was just overwhelmingly positive. This community of website designers out there were so grateful to have someone else's research, to have someone else put the time in and figure out how to do this. So they didn't have to spend time doing that. They could work on actually creating the site and just use my codes to customize. And I realized, okay, this niche market, there's some opportunity here. I was blown away again by the response of the community and how much positive feedback I got. So I decided, all right, we're going to focus on Squarespace 100%. I used to do WordPress. I used to do Wix. I would do anything my client wanted me to do, but I realized Squarespace, that was where it was at. That was where the opportunity to niche really could be. And I stuck with it. And man, I'm so glad I did. But it's been such an exciting ride. In addition to the customizing, Squarespace released a new version of their website platform builder. I believe it was 2 years ago in April. So yeah, it's been a little over 2 years. And when they first released it, it was so drastically different than the old version that a lot of people who focused on Squarespace specifically kind of threw their hands up in the air and said, nope, I'm just going to stick with the old version. I'm not going to learn this. But I was too excited. So I dove in head first and I became one of the first experts on this new version of Squarespace, to the point where Squarespace has actually hired me to teach webinars on this new version to the Squarespace Circle community. So I've had the absolute honor and privilege of working with the Squarespace education team and the Circle leaders and really getting everyone else on board excited about this. Again, Squarespace sounds like such a niche market and customizing it with CSS absolutely is, but holy guacamole, there are so many people out there that want to learn about this stuff with me. This is my favorite place to be on the World Wide Web in this little niche right here.
Oh, such a good story. And you being the go-to gal for Squarespace. Like, like that's
it's amazing. Like
full circle moment here. And this has also led to other bigger partnerships that you have coming up and collaborations. And it's exciting to see you be able to hone in on your zone of genius, who you're helping the most. Sometimes it's a little painful to be like, people might want to ask about Wix or WordPress, but to see that there's the most opportunity there or just where your zone was in this lane with Squarespace and run with it, that puts you on the path to be the go-to gal instantly, right? And just in claiming that too. So, all right. Thanks for going down that path with me. I'm like, I just am so fascinated by this and it can't help but just like, we can't just skim over it. We got to dive in a little bit.
Oh, absolutely. I love my origin story. It's still wild to me and I've lived it.
Yes. All right. So let's talk websites, because customizing to make things look pretty. I mean, listen, I am here for that all day long, but I also know that we need to think about, what are we putting on our websites to help them convert? And I will be really candid, and the timeline of us recording this is really on point, because I have never really used my website to sell. Now, especially my main website, obviously we have landing pages and that leads to sales pages and funnels and stuff. But because of that, and because of the podcast or social channels or different ways that we were bringing people in, I have never built a business that's based on getting traffic to my website and converting it. Hmm. And now we have some new things coming around here at GoToGal Media, and I'm revamping our website. And I don't even know if that's fully going to be in the direction of, you know, I haven't fully decided what should go on there, which is probably also why I'm like, what should we do on there? I'm at that point where I'm like, oh, I know we need to do some website updates. And so this is on my mind too, and especially when making those updates, whether someone's starting fresh with a whole new website or just doing some little tweaks to keep it current and aligned with what you're currently offering, I think taking it from this lens of what is going to create the most impact to convert, what should we be looking for, what should we be doing, is a really good place to start, and maybe just simplify the process too.
Absolutely. Yes.
So what's your overall philosophy with this before we get into specific of just like, how should we be thinking about our websites in terms of them being a tool to support growing our business?
Yeah, I think it's really important to remember that I believe the latest statistic was 80% of consumers, maybe it was 84%, visit a website for a business before doing business with them. And that's even brick and mortar places. You really do need to have a website that is a positive impact on people who might be interested in working with you. It's not something that you can just throw up there and call it good to go. It's going to be the first impression. And it's so important to remember this first impression. They might interact with you on social. They might have seen a friend send over a flyer or something. But for the most part, when someone wants to learn about a business and they go to that website, they are there to judge you. And you want to make sure that you're representing yourself well, not just through picking a pretty color or a pretty font, but the content of the page matters. But before we get into that too much, I do want to pull the pressure off because that's a pretty heavy place to start. I think it's so important to remember that a website is not permanent. You can change it at any time. So you have to have something out there. Start with something. And when you think of something better, a better tagline, a better call to action, or something more exciting to offer, you can change it at literally any time. It's not a permanent thing. Get something out there. And then over time, you can make it better and better.
Oh, that is such a good, I love your philosophy and such an important reminder because back in the day of website, it was like you would pay all this money, have someone do your website, and then you wouldn't really touch it again until it was time to invest all over again. And what I love about tools like Squarespace or WordPress that are able to be updated and changed pretty easily, sure, you can still hire a professional to do that for you, but you don't want to be in a situation where your hands are tied, where you or a team member can't easily change or update something on there because it should be a living, breathing thing. So absolutely, that's a really good reminder. And yes, and also it doesn't have to be all or nothing. Just because you're not going to update the whole website doesn't mean you can't make a few updates. After this interview, you might be inspired to make one change. Go do it. Like, that's what it's all about.
Yep, definitely. Update it at any time. So hopefully that takes the pressure off. It's still super duper important to leave a good impression on people visiting your website. But oh my gosh, I change the text on mine, the sales page on mine I'm redoing now. Probably 3 or 4 times a year, I give that thing an overhaul because I'll see some cool design that one of my YouTube subscribers created. I'll be like, oh my gosh, that's awesome. Why don't I have something like that on my website? It's so easy to change. So don't be afraid to update it.
Oh, okay. So when it comes to our website, what do you look for in terms of a website that is primed to lead to conversion? So what are the key elements, I don't know, whatever the like, whatever the word would be for that. Like, what are the key things that we should have in place if we want to make sure that our website is going to support bringing in sales for the business?
That's the number one thing. If you take away anything from this podcast, this is the one thing I want you to remember. Every page of your website should have a purpose. You need to have a specific call to action, some type of actionable step for every single page. And of course, sales page, the point of that is to sell something, but even down to your about page. If the purpose of your about page is to connect, do you have your social links on there? Do they know how to reach you? What is the next step you want someone to do when they visit that page? So give every page on your website a purpose, a specific call to action or next step for the person seeing that actual page. They need something to do next. So make sure you actually explicitly state it on your website.
Ooh, okay. So every page has a call to action, not just the sales pages, but every page has a call to action. And that call to action, it could just be to social. Does it matter if it's an opt-in? Could it be to another website page? It's just a clear go do this next type of thing.
Yeah, some clear next step is so important, but I love that you mentioned opt-in because that's something that I think a lot of entrepreneurs are kind of afraid to try if they're not selling something specifically, if they can't give someone 10% off your next order of my fancy handmade soaps, like what do they offer? I think that everyone out there needs to promote a PDF with some type of educational content that's parallel to your product or to your service. If you are a coach, maybe create some type of PDF that can walk people through a basic exercise or even one that's just about working with you. Like if you're interested in working with me, these are the case studies or testimonials or here are 5 steps. Create some type of PDF with educational content and a parallel to what you offer, but make sure that it's promoted across your site, not just on one page. Don't make it hard for people to give you their email address. Make sure that it's easy to do that all over your website.
Now, does it make a difference? Do you find that the repetitiveness of if you're promoting that same opt-in on all the pages, people may have a few more touch points or interactions with it before they opt in? Do you find that that's more effective, or is it better to kind of sprinkle what might be the more aligned opt-in to that page?
If you have the flexibility to have multiple types of opt-in, definitely mix it up and try to make it aligned with what they're going for. But me personally, I have two specific freebies that I have as opt-ins. One of them is an intro to CSS for Squarespace, just copy and paste basics. And the other one is a training on just creating a website in general. Those are the two, I guess, two paths that my audience will take. They're either brand spanking new to creation or brand spanking new to customization. So I want to make sure they're directed in either one of those funnels. But I do promote an opt-in on every single page on my site. Every blog post has it. The homepage has it. My about page has it. There's an ability for someone to find this on every page. So you bring up a great point. If you do have more than one type of opt-in or more than one approach that you want to promote, absolutely funnel that on the right landing page that's appropriate for that opt-in. But if you only have one, or if you don't have one at all, create one and put it everywhere. I think the rule of three is something that's kind of interesting to mention right now. Usually takes someone about three times of seeing something before they're willing to do it. So if you show them your opt-in on three different pages as they're clicking around from your homepage to your services page, and they think, okay, these services are cool, let me learn a little bit more about them. And then they're on your about page. What should they do once they're there? Opt-in and actually download that PDF so you have a way of contacting them through your email. That's a great example of a quick flow for a service page through a website there.
Ooh, great tips. Do you have a favorite? Oh, there's like the welcome mat that I think is really popular, which is like takes over, I think, the whole screen on the homepage, or there's pop-ups, or there's fancy pop-ups that, you know, don't pop up until you're doing exit intent or something, or it's just like a box on the page. And I'm sure there's like 1200 other options for this. Is there a style of opt-in that you are really for or really against? Like, don't do this, or like, this is my favorite. Any tips in that wheeled?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to start with the ones that I don't like. It's the exit intent and the scroll through pop-up. As you start to read a blog post and something pops up and interrupts you, my first thought is rude. I was reading, like, what the heck? So I am not a fan of those whatsoever. Now, they might work for some businesses and it might be something that has a huge click-through rate for some people. But me personally, my own personal preference is to completely get rid of those. I like to have the inline opt-ins. The homepage is a great example. I think everyone should have their opt-in above the fold or above the very bottom of that first view of the page when it loads. So closer to the top if possible. But in a blog article or a longer form page on your site, I should say, having just an opt-in inside the page content where it seems like a good place to mention it is a great idea. An opt-in isn't an afterthought. It's not like you want to throw a newsletter at somebody, right? It's not like you would actually chuck a postcard in someone's face when they walk into your store. And that's what some of those pop-ups can do to you virtually. I would much rather have it be there on the counter when I'm looking at the products. And that's what an inline form can do. So I would definitely recommend have something in the content of your page. But absolutely on your homepage, before they have to start to scroll, you should have your opt-in there as well.
Okay. I love your analogy here with the postcard, because that's literally what I'm imagining. Like, you're walking through the mall and those people that are like trying to like shove a pamphlet and you're just immediate no, right?
Yep. Exactly. We're doing that virtually and we need to stop that behavior. That's not fun.
Right? That's how I am with a pop-up. I'm just like immediate no, right? And on mobile sometimes, you can't even get out of it. And then I just leave the whole page, right? And so it is. It's like, there's something about that approach that it is. It's like immediate now. Where if once you're walking around a store or shopping and they're like, oh, I'm interested in this, or you're engaging, then getting that discount code or that ability to get more something that you want for free, that's all that more exciting and you're more open to it. And yes, how you describe that, I think makes a lot of sense. And sometimes we just do things because that's the way it's always done, or that's the way we think we should be doing it. So
yeah, I don't think like that permission that in your
not.
Yeah, exactly. That in your face marketing is not really my style, but I do think it's important to actually promote it. So many people will just put it at the very bottom of a blog post or the footer of their page, which is okay, but that kind of signals that you're not excited about it. You're not proud of the value that you put into this content. If you create a good opt-in, you should be excited to share that value with your audience. You should be ready to promote it in the middle of your article or in the middle of a page because you know it's going to deliver what they want at that moment. So don't be afraid to promote it. Don't hide that thing down in the footer. You can definitely be proud of what you've created. If it's got enough value, that's what you should be sharing with your audience as often as possible. Just maybe not chucking that postcard in their virtual face.
All right. Love it. Okay. So we got the every page has a purpose and a call to action. That call to action may or may not be an opt-in, but we want those opt-ins wherever we can put them in the spaces where it just feels the most natural. What else? Let's move on to what else should we be thinking about in terms of
this one right here is one that I think a lot of people who don't have any background in web design aren't aware of how impactful this can be on a subconscious level for people viewing your site. This is such an interesting one. I've tested this with some of my clients in the past and on my own website, and I strongly recommend it. You should have a cohesive color scheme on your website that goes with your branding. We're all on the same page there. But using a specific accent color for all of your calls to action can be really impactful. If you have one color that really pops, don't use it for the header and the image subtitle text and an active link in your footer and one word in your logo or all of those things. Pick one specific vibrant color and only use that for really important calls to action, like clicking the submit button on a form or that form to actually grab the pop-up or lead generation thing. Or if you want someone to book a call with you, make it that bright color. If your calls to action are the only spots for that accent color, it really makes it a lot more enticing because it's so rare. People really get excited about clicking on it. So keep that cohesive color scheme, but save one special color.
Okay. My brain is trying to wrap my head around this because I understand the words that you are saying, but I'm also like, but does it match? Does it look out of place? Like the part of me that just wants everything to feel cohesive is like a little bit freaked out right now. So how do you have this on your site? Like, I feel like I need a visual, which I realize, I'm sorry, you're listening. You don't have a visual, but I need to like explain this to you and more. Because is the only place they're seeing the color in that button?
It's going to be there. That vibrant spot is going to be in that button. And it can be a complementary color. It can be an analogous color. It still should be a part of your color scheme. But the whole concept here is to make it so rare that they're just extra compelled to click it because they haven't seen it very often. They haven't interacted with it too much on a regular basis. So when they see something that stands out from the rest of it, doesn't have to be dramatic, just a little bit, they're going to be even more excited to click on this and interact with it because it's a new thing. It's a fresh thing. It's an exciting thing for them visually and subconsciously. So try and reserve one color for those exciting calls to action.
Okay.
Even if it's just like two shades darker from your favorite shade of pink that you have everywhere, you've got one shade that's just two shades darker. Use that for the buttons for your calls to action. It'll pop just a little bit more off of that lighter pink background, something along those lines.
Okay. And some of our opt-ins, we have a kind of orangey yellow color that we use and it does pop. And I think we don't use that exact color anywhere else, but we definitely use a yellow other places. So maybe that's an easy one because I feel like we also sometimes use the red for the button because red pops. But we use the red a lot of places, so it probably doesn't stand out as much as that orangey yellow.
Exactly. That's the concept there. It's not going to really stand out as something different to anyone viewing your site if they've seen it a couple of places. It kind of takes away the importance of what that color is trying to get you to do. So if you have a color that you reserve just for those exciting moments, just for those conversions, try and save it for the really important ones. But again, it doesn't have to be drastically different. Even just a little different will be enough to spark that subconscious spot in our brain that says, ooh, that thing's different. I got to pay attention to this one.
All right. We're getting like the insider tips here. I'm open. I'm listening. I'm taking notes. Oh, no, that's a really good one. And one that I don't think is intuitive because we think like, oh, these are the colors that we're using. We may just pick like the brightest of the ones that we're already using. But if it's all these other places on the page, it's not going to stand out as much.
Exactly. Yep. I hope that was helpful. It's definitely something that's kind of new for me in my own website design process. I've been studying a lot of design lately, at least over the last 5 years or so. Since stepping away from working with clients directly, I honestly do more research about design because now I'm working with thousands of website designers around the world, and I want to make sure they have the latest and greatest information. So my research levels on this kind of stuff are so much more dramatic than it was when I used to do this as my bread and butter. So that was one that just stood out to me a lot over the last couple of years and has been a game changer for my own website and getting people to opt in. So I hope that your listeners are finding some value in that too. And again, your website's not permanent, so just give it a try. Try changing up the one color for those calls to action, run it for a month, and then take a look at that data and see how well it did. See if it worked for you too, because your website is not permanent. You can change it at any time.
So true. So true. Okay. Any other tips for us today?
Gosh, those are the big ones for sure. The page needs to have a purpose. Promoting that PDF or that piece of content as often as possible where it's applicable and using that bright accent color that's still cohesive with your color scheme is very important. But I guess definitely the number one tip is just to have something out there. This first impression is really important. Don't be afraid to get started with these website builders. Even if you have no experience with web design, they are so incredibly easy these days. You don't have to spend $30,000 hiring some professional to build the most amazing website in the world. Hop on Squarespace, start a trial, get the ball rolling with that, and change it as you learn more and develop more. And there are professionals out there. If you're still too afraid, you can definitely find a professional to build on an easy-to-use platform. So you can still make changes yourself, but they can handle all the grunt work of getting everything set up. Totally a possibility.
Yes. Even today with these, like, these are all such actionable, simple, impactful tips, right? But we can take action, implement this. It doesn't have to be a whole new redesign. If you have a couple extra minutes, I have one other thing that we could, since we have some extra time, we can chat about.
Absolutely.
And that's from the design perspective. Is there, whether it's with your students, with your own site, any design trends that either you're like, this is going out, if this is your site, you have like a bright orange shag rug and it needs to go, or or is there something that you see coming up where you're like, you know what, this is a trend I'm seeing that can freshen up your site or whatever it is, but anything in the design world that we should be looking out for or thinking about?
Absolutely. I definitely like to warn people to stay away from the super trendy fonts that you'll see. You'll see lots of things that kind of fade in and fade out over time. Finding something that aligns with your brand is so much better than a font that you thought looked cool on someone else's website. Try and find something that really aligns with your own style rather than what's the coolest thing that you've seen in the last 2 weeks. On that note, however, I also notice accessibility becoming a lot more important, which is just fabulous and something I strongly promote. Trying to create a website that is accessible to people using screen readers or people who might be colorblind, for example. Trying to make sure that your website is accessible to everyone is really starting to take a forefront in the web design topics and forums that I participate in, and I absolutely love it. So a huge part of that is not using a font that's hard to read. Just because it looks cool and retro or is like a super thin sans serif font, if it might look neat to you, but your audience is actually a 70-year-old gardener, they're not going to be able to read some ridiculously scripted font on their phone. They're going to need to be able to read your blog title. So pick something that actually is accessible to other people. Focusing on web accessibility is definitely a trend I'm seeing, and I'm very happy about it.
Ooh, I wasn't thinking about that originally through the lens of our conversation, but now that you mention it, I have been hearing more about this too. And absolutely, not just in our program should we be thinking about that, but also in the things that would lead people to our programs. And I think if we want to be able to support a more diverse community and have that accessibility in the way that we're offering our offers and services, that it makes sense that our website would be able to accommodate those people too. And so having that in place. And what I found with most, whenever, even for this is different but similar, with even when I accommodate things for myself, I have ADHD and there's certain things that I do in my own learning that make it easier for me. And what I've found is that when I put those things into a course or when I'm doing that with a client, even if they don't have ADHD, they usually appreciate it too. It usually helps them in some way. And that has been really eye-opening to me. And as I learn more about making everything more accessible, I find that most of those things are things that are going to help a lot of people and perhaps everyone and just make it an overall better experience. That thoughtful design can be the difference between it not being accessible or being accessible, but even the people that wouldn't necessarily have been impacted otherwise may get a positive impact from it too. As a side
Absolutely.
Effect.
Absolutely. I think that is a great point to bring up. Just because it is extra accessible for other people doesn't decrease the accessibility for people who might not have those specific parameters when using something. I think your ADHD example is a great one. If it works for your brain and helps you keep track of these things, just because I don't have ADHD doesn't mean I'm not going to benefit from the way you present that information in a much more accessible way. To tie it back to websites, I think mobile is a great example. There are some very specific parameters for how big a button needs to be so that anyone can click on that button or that link. Having a super tiny set of buttons, like three buttons crunched in super small on the screen, I might have more dexterity than someone else, but that doesn't mean I want to sit there and like try and pinpoint it with my pinky finger to make sure I'm hitting the right link. If you have them spaced out properly, set to accessibility standards that are out there right now, I'm going to be pretty happy that I can hit that button with my thumb and keep stirring my pancakes at the same time. All right. That's definitely the way to go. Making accessible for everyone is just good in the long run.
100%. All right. Well, any last tips before we wrap up for today? Could be about accessibility or websites in general, or even just like the online world of business that we're in.
Yep, absolutely. Gosh, to wrap it up, I think the number one tip would be willing to give it a try. When it comes to this website creation, when it comes to picking a unique color or learning a bit more about website accessibility and how you could maybe change the layout of your buttons, you just got to be willing to try. Keep that attitude and you're going to definitely go far in business.
Oh, well, thank you. And thank you for being one of those people that makes it easy to try things because listen, it's probably a story that I think really resonates is when I started college, my major was new media publishing and we had to take classes in the school of publishing, in the school of print media, in the school of design, and in the school of IT. And I tell you, I had no background at all of IT. And freshman year, first semester, I am taking a JavaScript class with a professor that is used to teaching people who are IT majors. So out of my wheelhouse and bubble and everything. And it was so hard. And a new major.
It's so intense.
So then a new major opened up that was graphic media publishing. Sounds very similar, but was different. And it was a smaller major and it was all in the school of print media. And it was a similar concept. We still learned a little bit of code. We still learned design. We still learned the publishing and printing aspects, but it was all in the school of print media. It was all with that same core group of teachers and professors. And that made such a big difference because they were able to teach it to us through the lens of how we needed it, understanding the areas that like, okay, we weren't coming into this as experts in coding. I would not that anyone's going into college, but there's people that are just like, they know that and they've been coding since they're like nine. And there's people like me that were like, what is HTML? I don't know any of this. And that made it accessible and that made it where we were able to understand what they were saying. Like, it was just such a better experience for me. And people were like, it sounds like you're in the same major. Why even bother changing? I'm like, it is such a big difference. And when I look at you in this space, that is what you are doing with code for this industry. And it's making it accessible. You're able to talk about things that normally people would be talking about. Normally it would be some, you know, probably a man and probably talking about it to people, through the lens of people that have been coding their whole lives. And the fact that you're able to be you and bring your perspective, but make it relevant and make it simple. I think that's what makes all the difference.
Thank you so much, Jacqueline. I so appreciate that compliment. That is absolutely what I try to do, is to make it as accessible as possible. And I'll tell you a little secret. When I first started doing this, my mom is my best friend. I'm such a mama's girl all the way. And I used to start working with my emails and blog posts and I'd send them to her and say, hey, does this make sense? She's a very smart woman, but she didn't grow up with computers like I did. So if I can explain this in a way where she can look at that and say, oh yeah, I got it, then I know I'm teaching the right thing. I want it to be accessible. So I appreciate that so much. I want to take the scary out of it, make code possible for everyone.
Totally. All right. So Becca, this has been amazing. How can we stay in touch with you?
I would absolutely love to see you on my YouTube channel, youtube.com/InsideTheSquare. And definitely check out my blog, InsideTheSquare.co. I can help you get started with your website. I can help you customize your website and really give you lots of fun ideas and actionable tips on how to make that virtual home for your business ever so awesome.
Amazing. All right. Thank you so, so much.
Can I just say thank you so much for listening? I don't think I say it enough, but I love that you are here. If you enjoyed today's episode, or if you've been getting value from this podcast, would you do me a quick favor? Head on over to iTunes and leave a rating and review. When you leave a rating and review, it basically tells iTunes that they need to spread the word and tell more people about this podcast. And I am on a mission to get the word out. I'm so grateful for your support. We want to make sure to shout you out too. So if you do leave a rating review, keep your eyes and ears open. We will be either shouting out on the podcast or on Instagram stories.